Well, I'd like to introduce myself. My name is Maish Goldish. If you've never heard of me, you'll probably find out why in a few minutes. Maish is an unusual name. It's a Litvak. I'm a Litvak, and my grandfather gave me the name. He was also a Litvak. And the Litvaks can't pronounce O. In Hebrew, my name is Moshe, but Litvaks can't say O. They say A. So my name is Maisha. My father-in-law told me, actually, it's very good to be a Litvak on Pesach, because at the Seder, if you're not a Litvak, you only get to drink Arba Kosos, 4 cups of wine. But if you're a Litvak, you get to drink Arba Cases. That's why my father-in-law is not a comedian, but a wonderful man. Meanwhile, I enjoy the name Maish. I was quite surprised, in fact, that I just took my first trip to Israel in December of this year and discovered many places in Israel that were named for me. I visited a yeshiva that was near the Kotel called Maish HaTorah. A lot of kids keep telling me they're learning at Maish, which was very flattering. And I visited a very religious section of Jerusalem called Maish Arim and spent Shabbos in a community called Maish Shemesh, which is right next to Ramat Maish Shemesh. So it was all very nice. It's very exciting being here today on OU Radio. First, I'd like to say hello to all my friends out in Lakewood, New Jersey. I'm sure you're all on your computers now. If you've never heard of me before, I've been on 2 national programs, Welfare and Unemployment. Just kidding. Just Welfare. Okay. I've got a little different background. I'm from Oklahoma. You don't meet too many Jews from Oklahoma. It's a very, very small Jewish community there. In fact, it's so small that I remember one year they had to cancel the Israel Day Parade because the marcher broke his leg. It's a tiny community. I was born on a Jewish holiday called Halloween. I don't know how many of you know this. I see they don't really teach this in the yeshivas, but Halloween was a Jewish holiday in Europe hundreds of years ago, where Jewish children would go from house to house collecting challah. And they would put the challah in their big paper bags, and they would say, challah has been taken. That's where you get the expression, to take challah. But the non-Jewish children couldn't pronounce ch, so they called the holiday Halloween, and they went house to house collecting any kind of chazerai, and that's the tradition that we have today, but it was originally Halloween. I come from a very prominent Jewish family in Oklahoma. Perhaps you've heard of my parents. Their names are Mommy and Daddy. And it was kind of interesting growing up in Oklahoma. There are a lot of Indians there. My great uncle actually was an Indian, Chief Gefilte Feather. And he wrote a famous song that I've noticed quite a few people sing on Friday night in their homes. It goes like this. Shalom aleichem, malachei ha-shareis, malachei elyon, mimelech, malachei ha-malachim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Perhaps you've sung that in your house. I went to a variety of schools in Oklahoma. I started out at an Orthodox school there. It was a little hard for me, so I transferred to a conservative school. That was still difficult for me, so I ended up in reform school. And I was very interested by a lot of things there. The rabbi is a very interesting man. He tried very hard. I don't know if he always had a grasp for halacha, but he tried. I remember once I caught him in the shul kitchen checking a piece of meat for shatness. So I don't know how much he really knew. I used to ask him all kinds of crazy questions. I remember when I was a kid, I asked him if I was allowed to ever ride in an airplane on Shabbos. He said, yes, I was, as long as I kept my seatbelt fastened, because then it was considered like I was wearing the plane. So I don't know if that's correct or not. I also asked him, I had a dog, a Jewish dog, an Alta Cocker Spaniel. It was quite Jewish. It could dance the canine horror. And I asked my rabbi, if I give my dog Fleischiks, how long do I have to make him wait until he can have Milchiks? And my rabbi said, it really depends on the type of dog. He said, German Shepherds wait 3 hours. So maybe he was right about that, too. As I got older, I asked him, is a man allowed to go to the opera because of the problems of Kol Isha? He told me he's not over till the fat lady sings. So I grew up, in a way, had my bar mitzvah in Oklahoma. It's a little different there than it is in New York. First of all, nobody really speaks Hebrew in Oklahoma, so everything is done in English. And I had to learn my parsha in English and lane in English. If you've never heard how that goes, you might be interested. I'll try to give you a little bit. It starts with the Gabbai. He starts out, calling up Jacob, the son of Samson, the priest, and then the blessing is made. Blessed art thou, Lord, our God, King of the universe, who has chosen us from all his people and has given us the law. Blessed art thou who has given us the law. And then the person reading the Torah continues, that's true. And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, go down and see what the people are doing. And Moses went down, and he saw a golden calf, and he said, ay, 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 get that calf out of here before someone sees it. Blessed art thou, Lord, King of the universe, who has planted a tree in our midst and has given us the law. Blessed art thou who has given us the law. That's true. And that's how the reading of the Torah, the laning, would go in Oklahoma. My bar mitzvah was quite memorable. I remember the rabbi gave me quite a big compliment, I felt. He compared me to Avraham Avinu, Abraham, the patriarch. He said, just like Avraham Avinu was destined to become a goy gadol, he said, so you, Mesh, are also going to become a goy gadol. In fact, he said I was already the biggest goy he had ever met. So I think that was a compliment. It's when I also learned my Hebrew name. They did call me up by my Hebrew name, Moshe ben Sorer Umore. So that was interesting. But for some reason, right after my bar mitzvah, my parents decided to send me away to yeshiva. And where could I go? Well, my father was an engineer and quite into technology, and he wanted to send me to the first yeshiva that ever taught computers. It was called Torah V'Das. I don't know if you remember the DOS computers. And I went there. It was a unique kind of yeshiva with an interesting setup. Every Torah class was followed immediately by a corresponding computer class. So, for instance, you'd have a class in Adam and Eve, Adam and Chava, and that was followed by the computer class Introduction to Apple. Apple, Adam and Eve. We had a class in Bilam and Bullock, and that was followed by Using the Cursor. That was the computer class. A class in blowing the shofar, tikiyah shofar, followed by upgrading your RAM. We had a class in raising tzedakah, followed by hard drives. Well, I remember one of the most interesting classes was bris milah, followed by a course in floppy disks. And if you like that, you might be interested. The class, we had a class in the Asher Yatzar Bracha that was followed by IBM. So all kinds of interesting things in that yeshiva. I was a little hesitant about going to a yeshiva because I couldn't speak Hebrew and didn't really know how to say much. And when I went up there, I told the rabbi immediately, please don't, on Shabbos, call me up. Don't call me up for any blessings at the Torah because it'll embarrass me. I don't know how to say them in Hebrew, and it'll embarrass me in front of my new classmates. And wouldn't you know, the first Shabbos, the rabbi called me up for an aliyah. I was a little taken aback. I went up to the bima, I leaned over to him, and I whispered, "Rabbi, I told you, I don't know the blessings. I can't say it. I don't know any Hebrew. Now you're embarrassing me in front of my friends. What am I supposed to do?" And the rabbi said, "Amen." So that apparently became my bracha. I did tell him, he asked me, "Would you do other things? Would you take hagba, lifting the Torah?" And I told him I couldn't really do that because I didn't believe in taking the law into my own hands. But I did agree to do galila, buckle up for safety, it's the law. Well, it got to be about this time I got very interested in music, and I started writing songs. I was from Oklahoma, you know, which is famous for the musical Oklahoma. When I was a kid, we used to sing songs from that. It's a little different when you're in when you're Jewish, singing songs from Oklahoma. I mean, when we sang "Poor Judd is Dead," we actually sat Shiva for him, you know. Surrey with the fringe on top, I thought, was about tzitzis. But in any case, I'm glad the engineer is enjoying this. Thank you, Dan. I started to write some songs when I was in high school, and one of them was about actually my tzitzis. When we would say Shema, I would gather my tzitzis, and I would say, "Kiss me once, then kiss me twice, then kiss me once again." I don't know how many of you remember that song. I'm kind of dating myself, which I did for many, many years. I also found that things were different at the yeshiva than they had been in Oklahoma. And as I visited other shuls, I found that a lot of shuls had a lot of different customs. And I wrote a song about it. It goes like this. Davening today can be confusing if you try davening by the rule, for you will find a different minhag in each shul. Take just for instance during Kaddish, some people stand while others don't. Everyone's watching if you will or won't. Some rise, some sit. Some rise, some sit. Poor Danny's on the floor there. That was one of my songs. One of my favorite Jewish holidays is Shavuos. We have a few more months before we get to it. But I always sort of wondered with Shavuos, you know, the Shavuos celebrates that the receiving of the Torah. Moshe had gone up to Mount Sinai for 40 days, and the Jewish people were waiting for him for 40 days, and I always thought, well, what did they do during the 40 days? I know toward the very end they built the golden calf, but I thought, what did they do for the most of the time? And I figured they're Jewish, so they probably sang a song. Jews love to sing. And this is the song I imagine that they sang while they were waiting for Moshe Rabbeinu to come down from Sinai. He'll be coming down the mountain when he comes. He'll be coming down the mountain when he comes. He'll be coming down the mountain. He'll be coming down the mountain. He'll be coming down the mountain when he comes. He will teach us all the mitzvos when he comes. He will teach us all the mitzvos when he comes. He will teach us all the mitzvos. He will teach us all the mitzvos. He will teach us all the mitzvos when he comes. He will bring the Torah to us when he comes. He will bring the Torah to us when he comes. He will bring the Torah to us. That's when we'll have Shavuos. He will bring the Torah to us when he comes. Everybody, he'll be coming down the mountain when he comes. He'll be coming down the mountain when he comes. He'll be coming down the mountain. He'll be coming down the mountain. He'll be coming down the mountain when he comes. Okay. I wrote quite a few songs. I remember writing a song. I actually worked for a Jewish program called Shalom Sesame. Some of you may remember that from the late 1980s, early 1990s. And I wrote a song that didn't make the program, but it was a song about making a minion, how you can tell when you've got a minion. And it went like this. One little, two little, three, not a minion. Four little, five little, six, not a minion. Seven little, eight little, nine, not a minion. 10, it's a minion now. Okay. Now maybe you'll understand why it never went anywhere. I like to write songs. One of my favorite songs was actually about my experiences in a shul where there was a lot of talking. As you know, this is a very big problem in shuls. People talk instead of davening. And I actually had to quit a shul once because there was just too much talking. I couldn't get a word in edgewise. It just wasn't fair. So I started going to Hashkama Minyan. The Hashkama minions usually are the ones that they start early and they go very quickly. They don't do a lot of singing. And I used to live in Teaneck, New Jersey, and I would go to the Hashkama minion there. And this is the way the Hashkama minion would be, you know, Ein Kel Okeinu. They would just go, Ein Kel Okeinu, Ein Kel Okeinu, Aleinu, Aleinu L'Shabach, Adonolam, Adonolam Hashem, no singing at all. I remember the Hashkama minion once went to a baseball game. And the announcer said, and now, ladies and gentlemen, our national anthem. And the whole minion went, oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed by the twilight? I'm telling you, they were up to the seventh inning stretch. The rest of the stadium was in the Rockets' red glare, and the Hashkama was already leaving. They were finished. But I wrote a protest song because I felt, you know, really, if people want to talk and the Gabbai's telling them to be quiet, why shouldn't they be able to talk? So I wrote a protest song about this, sung to the Gabbai, and it goes a little something like this. You say we can't talk while we're in shul. You say we should daven more instead. Well, Gabbai, I don't want to break your rule. But in shul, we all must say what must be said. These shuls are made for talking, and that's just what we'll do. One of these days, these shuls are gonna talk all about you. You say once we start the Birchas HaShachar, all our gab and gossip must be through. Well, buddy, just remember, I'm a big macher. I think the Rabbi Gabbai ought to talk to you. 'Cause these shuls are made for talking, and that's just what we'll do. One of these days, these shuls are gonna talk all about you. Start talking, shuls, yeah. Now, of course, I'm only kidding. You really shouldn't talk in shul. That message comes from my rabbi. Well, as I mentioned, I used to live in Teaneck. I was there almost 30 years, and finally the community got together and bought me a one-way ticket to Brooklyn. And that's where I'm living now, if you call that living. Brooklyn, compared to Teaneck, is I just was not prepared for how orthodox, what a frum community Brooklyn is. I mean, in Brooklyn, in Flatbush, where I live, they actually have a women's tefillah group for men only. I mean, I don't know how that works. There are many interesting stores that I found there. There's a store that sells footwear for pregnant women. It's called In a Gutta Shoe, and it's quite interesting. They sell shoes that are designed with extra support, and they guard their sole, and they have a Jewish sole. They guard their tongue, and they also have a special this week, actually, on Kollel loafers. So there's a furniture store on Coney Island Avenue, a kosher furniture store that sells filtered water beds. I mean, I don't know what that's all about. Don't let the bed bugs bite, whatever. There are a lot of controversies going on in Brooklyn, mainly about my living there, but there's also a whole thing with the Arev. You know, some people say an Arev is permitted in Brooklyn, and others say it's not permitted, and my rabbi personally says it's permitted, and he has a nickname. They call him the Arev Rav. But those who don't agree with it have actually vandalized the Arev. But they're very religious about it. When they vandalize it, there's a special bracha that they make called Hamotzi Lechi Min Haaretz. So I guess that makes it kosher. But I'm doing the best I can there. Now, at this point, you may be saying, Mesh, what do you do for a living? Because obviously you're not a professional comedian. And that's true. I've tried different. I've always looked for my station in life. I found it at one point, Texaco, and pumping gas. But I write children's books, and I've been doing that for about 30 years now. I'm trying to get some of them published. I mean, after 30 years, it would be nice. The publishers say that my titles do not lend themselves to books that they would publish for children. One of my latest books is called Strangers Have the Best Candy. I don't know. They don't want to publish that. And I just finished another book called Mr. Fork and Mr. Electrical Outlet Are Friends, which nobody seems to want to touch. So what could I do? I got married 6 years ago. Thank you. Thank you. 6 years ago, although it seems like only 2 days, Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av. My wife is Chaya Goldish, and I remember her name because every Friday night I sing that famous song, Mesh is Chaya Miimsa. It's an old song. And currently I'm writing children's books, and I'll be performing, actually, for those of you who are interested, at the Nevely Hotel this Passover, the first day of Chol HaMoed. I'll be there from 12:30 to 1 o'clock in their lobby right outside the lunchroom. So come and have lunch and hear me for a half hour before, and I guarantee you won't be eating much. I will be doing some of my famous Pesach riddles. Questions like, what's the best cheese to eat on Pesach? The answer, of course, is mozzarella. Mozzarella. Here's another one for you. What do they call Saturday night on Pesach? Matzah Shabbos. Now you're getting the idea. What's the best automobile to drive during Chol HaMoed Pesach? Well, you have a choice. Maserati, Mitsubishi, or just Nissan, the month of Nissan. And, of course, the classic, what do you call a stupid frog on Pesach? Dumb Tzvardeya. All right. I'll be doing some of my knock-knock jokes. I have Jewish knock-knock jokes. Knock-knock. Who's there? Baruch. Baruch Hu. Baruch Hu Baruch Shemo. Or another one of my favorites that I always start Ma'ariv with. Knock-knock. Who's there? The who. The who racham yechaper avon. Okay. And since Purim's coming up, here's one of my favorites. Knock, knock. Who's there? Vayehi bimei Achashverosh. Vayehi bimei Achashverosh. Who? Achashverosh. All right. Even I don't get that one. In any case, I would like to wish everybody a happy Purim. If you're interested in seeing a little bit of my humor, it's on the internet. You can find one piece that I wrote called The World Famous Story of Purim. If you Google me, well, am I allowed to say that, Dan, on radio? Google me? Okay. Because I understand that's why the rabbis in Lakewood banned the internet now. They said just as mixed dancing may lead to sex, so using the internet may lead to Googling yourself. We'll see if that makes the cut. In any case, if you Google either me or if you Google the title of the piece, which is The World Famous Story of Purim, I wrote this a couple of years ago from a shul in Teaneck. They were giving out shalach manis that had an international flavor, Israeli wine and French fries and I don't know, whatever else, Chinese noodles. And they wanted me to write something about Purim that talked about all the different countries of the world. I'll read you what I wrote, although you have to listen very carefully because I'm going to be mentioning about 30 or 40 different countries in here. This is the story of Purim, actually the world-famous story of Purim, by Maish Goldish. Purim is an international tale. King Ahasuerus was finished with his disobedient wife Vashti. "You can go now," he ordered her. After she had gone away, the king's messengers went roaming the land to find a new queen, and in the end, the beautiful Esther won the crown. Meanwhile, Mordechai sat outside the palace, where the chilly Haman would check up on him daily. "I hate you because you refused to bow to me," Haman scolded Mordechai. "You are a very stubborn man. You Jews are such Bahamas. If you keep this up, then mark my words, I will have all your people killed. Just wait and see, you turkey." Mordechai went into mourning and tore his clothing, a custom known as kareya. He urged Esther to plead with the king. The Jews fasted for 3 days and grew very hungry. Esther approached the king and said, "Can you please come to a banquet I've prepared for you and Haman?" At the feast, she invited her guests to a second banquet to eat samoa. The king asked, "Esther, why'd you make a big meal like this? Just tell me what you want. Unto half my United Kingdom will I give you." Esther replied, "Spainful for me to say this, but Haman is Russian to kill my people." Haman's loud wails could be heard. "Oh, man," Haman cried, "I rack my brains in an effort to destroy the Jews, but that sneaky Mordechai Egypt me." Haman and his 10 sons were hanged and went immediately to the Netherlands. And to sweeten the deal, the Jews were allowed to polish off the rest of their foes as well. "You lost your enemies, and you gained a friend," the king smiled. And that is why the Purim story is really a miracle. God decided to shine a light on his chosen people. So now let's celebrate. Forget all your serious business and just be happy. Serve up some wine and Taiwan on. Happy Purim. And let me wish everybody out there a very happy Purim. And reminding you, if you happen to be at the Nevely Hotel, first day of Chol HaMoed, Monday Chol HaMoed Pesach, be happy to see you there. This is Meish Goldish, signing off. Shalom.